we start today with our friends at Nature News. It's time for our monthly rundown of some of the top headlines in science. Joining me to do the honors is senior reporter Davide Castelvecchi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Heather.
All right. Researchers in the U.S. this past week made a huge announcement that they had genetically modified viable human embryos to correct for a potentially deadly mutation. Can you give us some of the details there?
Yeah. So the mutation is one of the possible causes of something called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which is a thickening of the heart muscle. And for the first time, they showed that they could revert this mutation or correct it while solving some of the issues that had plagued previous efforts.
Now, one of the things that jumped out at me is the fact that the DNA editing technique that they were using didn't actually go as planned. The embryos kind of overrode the CRISPR is the technique they were using, the CRISPR process. I mean, is this a potentially a big discovery just about the basic biology of how embryos works? And what does it mean for the prospects of modifying embryos in other ways?
That is very intriguing, in fact, because typically in this technique called CRISPR, you insert an enzyme that cuts up the DNA and then also a template that the cell uses to correct, to patch up the DNA where it was cut up. And instead, they saw that the embryos were using another copy they already had of the same gene to make the correction. And so that means if you attempt to insert kind of designer genes, it will not work because the cells will self-correct. It's possible. I mean, I guess more research is needed, as they always say.
Right. I mean, this step forward in part was big because it seemed to get over some of the hurdles, concerns about the safety of doing this and whether or not you could get all of the cells in an embryo to have the same genetic modification. Those were two big hurdles that the National Academy of Sciences here several months ago had said were obstacles to using this more widely. But maybe this is introducing something else we need to look into. I mean, does this really put us that much closer to the idea of being able to genetically modify human embryos and actually have that turn into genetically modified humans?
It's quite possible. I mean, at this stage, there's a lot of discussion. You know, bioethicists are very concerned and they try to set up guidelines. But it's always possible that, especially in countries that have lax regulation, some clinicians will say, oh, great technique. Now I'm going to use it.
All right. Well, let's stick with the theme of unexpected discoveries, or at least in this case, unexpected announcements. Astronomers have been looking pretty hard recently for exomoons, moons circling planets outside of our solar system. Apparently, one group thought maybe they had found the first one, but they wanted to confirm it. And before they could do that and make the announcement on their own terms, Twitter forced their hand. So what happened there?
Yeah, so what happened was that a colleague, another astronomer, saw that the researchers had booked time on the Hubble Space Telescope. And knowing this theme, they concluded they must have some kind of strong hint of an exomoon that they want to confirm.
I mean, it's quite the spoiler then to say, okay, well, we think they must have this discovery. They actually did turn around and add this potential discovery into a paper, a study they were publishing. I guess at some level, though, it's kind of like, well, what's the big deal about these exomoons that everybody's checking what everybody else is doing to see who's found the first one? What's the big deal here?
Well, now that exoplanets are a major industry, you know, that there's like thousands that are known and many different types, and it's a major field of research, exomoons are sort of the next big thing.
All right. Well, because apparently nothing is simple these days, we've got one more story of scientific twists and turns. A new look at satellite measurements of sea level seems to reveal some early inaccuracies that may have led to underestimates of the rate of sea level rise due to climate change. Now, of course, at least in the United States, when you put climate change and revised estimate into the same sentence, you're bound to get some raised eyebrows and some skepticism. So bottom line here, what does it look like is going on with the rate of sea level rise, and how confident can we now be in that answer?
Yeah, so it was a puzzle for climatologists because based on the amount of heating of the Earth and the rate of melting of glaciers and so on, they had expected sea levels would rise at a faster and faster pace. But until recently, there was this puzzling discrepancy. It seemed like the rate of rise was constant.
And based on this new analysis, it now looks like it's accelerating, right?
Yeah. So basically, they went back and looked at data from a satellite that's been up since 1992, and they saw that maybe the numbers for the first 6 years were artificially inflated, and so then the numbers for the following years seemed lower by comparison.
And how is this new analysis being received? I mean, does this feel like within the climate change community that, you know, scientists are saying, oh, yeah, this is good that we caught this mistake? Or are there people looking at this and saying, maybe it wasn't a mistake, maybe that, you know, correction was in there in the beginning for the right reasons? Is there any debate about this?
I get the impression that there's a sigh of relief because it was a discrepancy with other ways of measuring sea level rise from buoys, for example. So it's more like, oh, now it makes sense.
Ah, okay. Well, okay, last but maybe my favorite story of the lot this time around, just because it's so optimistic and we all need good news these days. The country of Jordan is apparently making real efforts and some progress boosting science and research in the Middle East. What are some of the things they've got going on?
Yeah, so this is from our correspondent, Amy Maxman, who went there and she interviewed Princess Sumaya, who is the cousin of King Abdullah, and is spearheading some of these efforts. One of the most exciting things that happened recently was the opening of Sesame, which is a major infrastructure.
And Sesame is a particle accelerator, right? It's for physics research.
It's a particle accelerator that is used to make these very tight X-ray beams that are used for anything from physics, like you said, to understanding the structure of proteins, to studying archaeological artifacts.
How are all of these efforts in Jordan being funded, and is it really just coming from within Jordan? With Sesame, they've got a lot of different countries collaborating to bring this together. So is this something that's kind of spilling over into the diplomatic realm of being able to create some new ties or maybe smooth relations in the region?
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the most remarkable or the most remarkable things about Sesame is that it's a collaboration that includes Jordan and other Arab countries and Turkey and so on, but also Israel. And Jordan is one of the few places where not only diplomats, but scientists from Israel and Arab countries can meet and cooperate on science.
And they're going to be hosting a big international conference this fall as well, right? Is that also kind of being looked at as an opportunity to bring some of these countries, at least the science communities within these countries with some tensions between them together?
Yeah, and also to put Jordan on the map for research. So that's the World Science Forum that you were referring to, which sometimes people refer to as the Davos of Science. And it will be the first time that it's hosted in a Middle Eastern country.
Well, that's very exciting. Davide Castelvecchi is a senior reporter for the journal Nature. Thank you so much.
Thank you.